I do hereby swear to be faithful to the Republic of South Africa.
And I solemnly and sincerely promise that we'll always promote all that will advance the Republic and oppose all that may harm.
Be a true and faithful counselor, discharge my duties with all my strength and talents to the best of my knowledge.
And true to the dictates of my conscience, do justice to all.
And devote myself to the well-being of the Republic and all of its people.
So help me God.
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 The 2024 elections are in many ways a step into the democratic unknown for South Africa, with the results for the first time since 1994 far from a far-gone conclusion. South Africans celebrate 30 years of democracy, having only ever experienced an ANC government. But patience has been wearing thin over the past few years. Record unemployment, sluggish economic growth, the slow pace of workplace transformation, an electricity crisis and growing concern over the country's water supply have all taken the shine off the continent's oldest liberation movement. This begs the question, how did we get here and how much of it is the ANC's fault? Our reporter Anastasi Mokgobo has been in conversation with political analyst Professor Pieter Duvenager to unpack some of the issues as it tries to convince voters to give it another chance on the 29th of May.
27th April 1994 was a historic day for South Africa, with long, joyous queues at voting stations across the country finally dealing a death blow to apartheid. It was the first time people from all walks of life had the right to vote. Nearly 20 million South Africans stood for hours to exercise their new constitutional right, pinning their hopes on democracy to change their fortunes for the better. The ANC received 62.7% of the vote and became the ruling party, with Nelson Mandela as president and Thabo Mbeki as his deputy. The phrase, "the people shall govern," finally became a tangible reality. Renowned political analyst Pieter Duvenager says, without a doubt, the ANC was seen as a party of hope.
It is a question of where we were as a country in 1994. And in many ways, the ANC was the alternative to the old regime and the National Party. So I think there was a lot of sympathy for the ANC in 1994. So there was, in many ways, an optimistic atmosphere and a hope, a hopefulness in the air that the ANC would govern in a manner to the benefit of all South Africans.
Duvenager believed, despite subsequent disappointments, most South Africans still have fond memories of Madiba and his administration. The late statement played the role of the father of the nation, trying to glue together the country's torn social fabric, while Mbeki worked in the background to change people's socio-economic circumstances, building and electrifying homes, providing water and sanitation, all while fixing an economy broken by years of apartheid sanctions.
Yeah, I would say so, that it was South Africa's honeymoon. And one must remember that President Mandela had a massive symbolic importance, not just for South Africa, but internationally. You know, there was a very deep feeling that he could represent something of an awakening or a renaissance of Africa. But also the North-South question, you know, that South Africa could play a kind of important role in bridging the gaps between the northern and the southern hemispheres of the world. And then also, as you will remember, South Africa's foreign policy was also very much linked to the idea of human rights. So all those things contributed to what I would describe a honeymoon period of South Africa. We were the flavor of the month, not just in Africa, but internationally. And I think on a national level, it also went with South Africa well. Our economy recovered after 1994. And there was, for me, if I think back of those years, also a better spirit between the different components of the South African population.
Madiba's only term in office came to be known as the country's honeymoon period, hosting and winning big sporting events and the seeming willingness of all South Africans to make a success of the democratic experiment even earned us the nickname the Rainbow Nation. After Mandela's tenure, former President Thabo Mbeki led the country between 1999 and 2008. Mbeki's era saw unprecedented economic growth, even though cracks began to appear with the arms deal scandal in the late 90s, a foreboding sign of things to come. Duvinage says Mbeki was a technocratic president who eventually lost touch with the people.
He was an effective technocratic president that kept South Africa's economy sound. And then he had this fascinating foreign symbolism and the concept of the African Renaissance. But he kept things nationally going, but he was more on the international stage. And in a certain sense, he lost the power battle within the ANC because he was so much on the international stage. The image of Mbeki, which was not very good at the end of his presidency, that image has improved due to the fact that the Zuma years had its own problems and deep problems. And I think that is why the image of Mbeki as an elder statesman of the ANC has improved after the Zuma era. And that is why many people are now turning to him, but they forget that in his presidency there were also a lot of problems around the way he kept in touch with the people on the ground while he was president.
The fallout from the arms deal also led to a rupture in the ANC, with Mbeki's ex-deputy Jacob Zuma winning a fierce battle for power at the party's elective conference in Polokwane in 2007. Kgalema Motlanthe served as caretaker president of South Africa from September 2008 to May 2009, following Mbeki's resignation. Zuma, already ANC leader for 2 years, was voted into office after the 2009 general elections. Zuma's presidency was, however, marred by numerous allegations of corruption and also saw a new phrase enter the South African lexicon, state capture.
People around him, and, you know, if you look at that era, it's almost like South Africa lost on many terrains, economically, also in terms of the reconciliation of the South African complex population. And then also internally, I think the ANC started to become more involved than in the past in faction fighting and the contestation for power at different places. And I think it's also the years in which governance, both not just at the national level, but also at the provincial level, if you think of the Free State and Ace Magashulu was there, and at local level, that the ANC, in terms of service delivery, etc., and one can just think of Eskom also in a broader sense, that service delivery, infrastructure planning, and all those things started to really become loose. And in many ways, those years are still with us, Anastasia.
Cyril Ramaphosa, the former deputy president who succeeded Zuma, made a commitment to rid the ANC of factions, corrupt leadership, and instill a culture of servant leadership and accountability.
Comrades, this conference has in many ways proven to be a watershed moment in the life and the history of our movement. At this conference, through the discussions that we have held, both in plenary as well as in our commissions, the discussions have been robust, and at times they have been quite loud and noisy, but they have always sought to unite all of us. And through our deliberations at this conference, we have chosen the path of renewal, to rebuild our movement and to restore the values that have been handed down the ages and the years by our forebears.
But many tainted ANC leaders remained in office even after the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture laid bare the extent of the corruption under Zuma's tenure and the central role played by the ANC in emptying the country's coffers. Ramaphosa soon died down, and the new dawn promised by Ramaphosa only served to shine a light on the cracks threatening the very foundation of the country. Duvinage says Ramaphosa has become the opposite of what ANC members and even South Africans who are not members of the ANC had hoped for.
For me, President Ramaphosa is much in the line of President Mbeki in the sense of a highly intelligent man, more of a technocrat, an ex-lawyer, but with deep experience in the National Union of Mine Workers. But there was a great hope at the beginning of his presidency that he would be somebody that could unite the ANC, but also give strong leadership from the top. And since then, we basically have a president that has gone most of the time missing in action. You know, it is as if he became very much incapacitated.
While Ramaphosa's promises of renewal are seen by many as well-intended, it is feared that it could be too little too late for the ANC when the elections come around. Failure to hold his leaders accountable has also clouded his presidency.
The whole issue, if I can put it, of corruption has not been substantively addressed by President Ramaphosa. Here and there were interesting things. You know, there was the state capture report, which I think he facilitated well, but we haven't seen enough action around that so far. Then one gets also the impression that he protects certain of his ministers about whom there are big question marks, you know, about their conduct and the way they have performed on the issue of corruption.
Could all the failed promises affect the governing party at the polls? Duvinage says it's highly unlikely, as ANC has many loyal supporters.
If we look on the ground, I think the rural ANC support will still be very much on the same level as the past. And I'm thinking of provinces here like Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, the Free State to an extent. I think though in those rural areas you will get people still voting for the ANC because many of those voters there also are not so linked into the, let's call it, the modern economy of South Africa. And information channels and the newspapers and the discussions. But one should also never underestimate the rural people and what kind of messages could circulate there. But that is my interpretation. I think semi-urban and urban South Africa is a different terrain for the ANC now because people are informed. People have seen with their own eyes if there's not service delivery in the suburb I'm living or the township I'm living, the metro or the municipality where I'm a voter. You know, from the ground up, there is an impression that the ANC as a party is not delivering. And now I also think in 2024 that there are alternatives, enough alternatives for South Africa and its citizens to look at politically. And we have the chance on the 29th of May to make that choice. But my plea is that all South Africans, wherever they are living, wherever they are, should take this election very seriously because we have a governing party that should be disciplined and the citizens have the opportunity to do that. And I think the ANC is definitely going to have a success rate of under 50%. That is my not just my feeling, but also if I look at the polls, even though polling in South Africa has its own problems. But I think that the ANC is definitely going to be under 50. The big question is just how far underneath and what that will do to the coalition politics that is our future.
Elections 24, The Power of Your Ex, is an original Jackpod podcast brought to you by Jacaranda FM News. Jacaranda FM cannot be held responsible for the views and comments expressed in this podcast. Follow Jacaranda FM News on Facebook and X, or go to jacarandafm.com and click on News. Listen to more episodes and the original series at jacarandafm.com. Click on Jackpot or on the apps where you can get all your other podcasts.